Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, How Successful People Become Even More Successful. Our guest today is Dr. Marshall Goldsmith, the world authority in helping successful leaders achieve positive, lasting change in behavior for themselves, their people, and their teams. He has been listed as one of the Thinkers 50, top 10 business thinkers in the world for the past 4 years. He is the author or editor of 35 books that have sold over 2 million copies, been translated into 30 languages, and become bestsellers in 12 countries. His latest book, Triggers, is a 2015 number one New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller. A reminder, today's teleclass will be available as a podcast on your conference website. And now, let's welcome Marshall Goldsmith to the Conference for Women teleclass. Welcome.
Well, I'm very, very happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to talking to you. I'll briefly introduce myself, and we will begin. My name is Marshall. I'm from a small town called Valley Station, Kentucky. Went to undergraduate school at a little engineering school, Rose Holman Institute of Technology. Got an MBA at Indiana, PhD at UCLA. I was a college professor and dean when I was young. Then for the past, I guess it's been now 38 years, I've done three things. I give talks or teach classes. So I travel all around the world doing that. I've been to 95 countries, and I love speaking and teaching. The second thing I do is write and edit books and articles. So I've written 35 books and 3 New York Times bestsellers. And then the final thing I do is I'm most famous for is coaching executives. And my coaching clients are CEOs or could be CEOs of huge companies. I'm the coach of the CEO of Ford and Pfizer and Glaxo and Walmart and the president of the World Bank, the head of the Mayo Clinic at the Girl Scouts, and all kinds of interesting people. And what I love about coaching is that's where I learn everything. And let me ask you to do several programs for women in leadership, which is always great fun for me. Now, today I've been asked to talk about what are some of the classic problems that come with success? What are some of the things not to do? And in my book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, I talk about 21 classic problems of successful people. I'm obviously in 20 minutes, I've got time to talk about 21 different things, but I'm going to cover some of the highlights. And then I'll also talk about a couple of very simple techniques you can use to maybe avoid some of these problems. Let's get started. I was interviewed in the Harvard Business Review, and again, Peter Drucker inspired the book with a quote, "We spend a lot of time helping leaders what to do. We helping leaders learn what to do. We don't spend enough time helping leaders learn what to stop." He said, half the leaders I meet, they don't need to learn what to do. But they need to learn what to stop. Well, that inspired the book. Now, I was interviewed. Let's get started. Number one, I was interviewed in the Harvard Business Review and asked a question. What is the number one problem of all successful people you've coached over the years? And my answer, winning too much. And what does that mean? If it's important, we want to win. Meaningful, we want to win. Critical, we want to win. Trivial, we want to win. And not worth it, we want to win anyway. Winners love to win. If you're listening to this telecast, there's a high probability in the game of life you would be defined as a winner. You're a successful person doing well in life. Winners love to win. It's hard for winners not to constantly win. And I'm going to give you a case study that almost all my successful clients fail, and you will probably fail this case study too. And when I say fail, they fail themselves. Sounds like this. You want to go to dinner at restaurant X. Your husband, wife, partner, friend wants to go to dinner at restaurant Y. Have a heated argument. You go to restaurant Y. It was not your choice. The food tastes awful and the service is terrible. Option A, critique the food. Point out our partner was wrong. This mistake could have been avoided had only you listened to me, me, me. Option B, shut up. Eat the stupid food. Try to enjoy it and have a nice evening. What would I do? What should I do? Almost all my clients, what would I do? Critique the food. What should I do? Shut up. Well, in almost every class I ask, how many people in the room have critiqued the food? Almost every hand goes up. And then I say, was that smart or stupid? Well, there's a pretty clear consensus. That was stupid. And as stupid as it was, I'm going to give you an example now that is so hideously stupid, it'll make that one pale by comparison. And at least half the people I work with have done this. What's it sound like? Case two. You have a hard day at work, a hard day. You go home, your husband, wife, friend, or partner is there, and the other person says, I had such a hard day today. I had such a tough day. And we reply, you had a hard day. You had a hard day. Do you have any idea what I had to put up with today? Do you think you had a hard day? Well, we're so competitive, we have to prove we're more miserable than the people we live with. I gave this example in my class at Dartmouth. The young man in the back raised his hand. He said, I did that last week. I asked him what happened. He said, my wife looked at me. She said, honey, you just think you've had a hard day. It's not over. Well, I got an email a couple of years ago from a graduate of my class. And anybody listening to me now sent me this kind of email, make my whole phone call worthwhile. The gentleman said, I was in your class 5 years ago. I know you don't remember me, but he said, I want to send you an email today and just say thank you. So yesterday I was in the office and I was having a terrible day, and my wife called and she started talking about what a hard day she was having. I was just getting ready to point out how her problems pale in significance to my own. When I remembered your course, I just stopped and breathed and asked myself, I'm talking to my wife. This is not the enemy. I just said, I love you. Thank you for the sacrifices you made for the family. Then he said, I spent $25. I went home, bought her some flowers, gave her the flowers, and said, I love you. I said, it was the best $25 I ever spent. Thank you very much. Well, the next time you get into that, I'm going to win and prove I'm right, take a deep breath and ask a tough question. What am I winning? Is it worth it? Well, next on my list of behaviors to avoid, adding too much value. Now, what's that mean? Adding too much value. Let's imagine I'm young, smart, dedicated, hardworking, and enthusiastic. You're my boss. I come to you and I say, I give you an idea and you think it's a great idea. But rather than just saying great idea, our natural tendency is to say, well, that's a nice idea. Why don't you add this to it? The problem is the quality of the idea may go up 5%. My commitment to execute the idea may go down 50%. It's no longer my idea. Now it's your idea. Incredibly difficult for smart, successful people not to constantly add value, especially those with technical or engineering backgrounds. Well, one of my good coaching clients retired, probably 8 or 9 years ago. His name is J.P. Garnier, former CEO of GlaxoSmithKline, big drug company. I asked J.P., what'd you learn about leadership as a CEO of this huge company? He said, I've learned a very hard lesson. And by the way, every time you get promoted in life, this lesson will become more real for you. He said, my suggestions become orders. He said, if they're smart, they're orders. If they're stupid, they're orders. If I want them to be orders, they are orders. And if I do not want them to be orders, they're orders anyway. My suggestions become orders. Well, every time we get promoted, more and more of those suggestions become orders. I asked JP, what did you learn from me when I was your coach that helped you the most? He said, you taught me one lesson, helped me be a better CEO and have a happier life. I asked him, what was that lesson? He said, before I speak, stop and breathe and ask myself one question. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Now, I'm going to teach you a very simple technique you can use to modify your own behavior. And if you're the coach of others, help them modify their behavior. It's called using small amounts of money to create large changes of behavior. And I'm going to talk about three ways you can use this. The first one is called destructive comments, those unnecessary, nasty comments about our colleagues. Well, everybody preaches this sermon that says, you know, we want to create an environment where people reach out across the organization. We want to build positive relationships with our colleagues. We want to build win-win relationships, tear down those silos. Everybody preaches the same sermon. What happens to all this corporate happy talk when we stab our colleagues in the back? Well, things don't get better. They get a little bit worse. Now, I don't want to look like I'm preaching at you. I also get feedback. And if you read my bio, which was politely introducing me there, you heard it, I won lots of fancy awards. Well, none of those fancy awards came from my staff, and none came from my family. I remember my daughter, Kelly, was 14. She goes, Wall Street Journal, top 10 consultant in the world. She said, Daddy, I want to be in your field. I said, Kelly, that makes Daddy proud. Why do you want to be in my field? She said, the standards are low. Well, I'll never forget the first time I got feedback about myself from my own staff. One item was called avoids destructive comments about other people. What score did I make? 8th percentile. 92% of the people in the world did better than me, and I wrote the test. I go back to my staff and said, staff, I feel good about most of this feedback. If something I want to do better, this business is not bum-wrapping people. I teach everybody else not to do that. I said, I've been one of the worst offenders. I said, if you ever hear me make such a bad comment about a person or group, bring it to my attention. I'm going to pay you $10. Well, then I gave them a pep talk because I thought they'd be embarrassed to ask for the money. Pep talk wasn't needed. No more than 10 minutes later, somebody called. I said, yeah, he's a customer. I said, he wants some. He don't ever want to pay. He's cheap, $10. My partner, Tim, called. That fool, how'd he get a PhD? $10. By noon, I've lost $50 and refused to speak to anyone for the rest of the day. First day cost me $50. Second day, it cost me $10. Third day, it cost me nothing. Still cost me money. Yeah. What score to make last time? 4.8 out of 5. What's that show? Spend a few $1,000, you get better. Now, this business of using money, small amounts of money to create large changes of behavior, is totally counterintuitive, yet shockingly effective. Most of my clients are rich people. I found them $20 for every sin. $20 U.S. These people are so rich that if they dropped $20 on the ground, it wouldn't be worth bending over to pick up. Most of them would rather die than lose the $20. One gentleman, I'm going $20, $40, $60, and the money all goes to a charity, and he picks a charity. He starts complaining. I said, you made $35 million last year. There's $20 to a little homeless child. Shut up. He said, you're right. I'm an ass. Take 50. It's not the money that makes this work. It's the winning. It's hard for winners not to constantly win. So the next thing I'm going to put on my avoid list is starting with no, but, or however. Now, one night I was having dinner with General Eric Shinseki. He's the head of the U.S. Army. We're in a room surrounded by 2 to 4-star generals. So he looks at me and he says, Marshall. He said, Marshall, who's your favorite customer? I said, sir, my favorite customer is smart, dedicated, hardworking, driven to achieve, creative, entrepreneurial, stubborn, know-it-all, and never wants to be wrong. I said, do you think any of the generals in this very room may fit such a description? He said, Marshall, we have a target-rich opportunity. Well, one of the things is I teach people, don't start a sentence with no, but, or however. Classic problem with stubborn people. If somebody talks to me, the first word of the mouth, I'm talking to somebody, the first word of the mouth says, no, what'd that say? Shut up, you're wrong. But disregard everything you said. However is a fancy word for but. Well, one of my clients was stubborn. I reviewed his feedback report, and he said, but Marshall. I said, that's free. I said, if you do this again, I'm going to charge you $20 every time you do it. He said, but Marshall, 20. No, 40. No, 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 60, 80, 100. He got so much better learning this one very, very simple point. A woman that I've coached who really uses all these tools very effectively is called Frances Hesselbein, greatest leader I've ever met in my life. Peter Drucker said the greatest leader he's ever met. CEO of the Girl Scouts for 14 years. And one thing she always says is, you know, look, if you're not going to really add value, don't show off and prove how smart you are. Don't make angry or destructive comments about other people. Before you talk, just breathe and you ask yourself a simple question. You know, am I in control here? And she said, the second we get angry and lose control, where's the problem? It's not on the outside. The problem is now on the inside. And if you get angry, don't talk. Don't make destructive comments. Don't prove people are wrong. If you get angry, you get upset, be quiet. Great quote from Frances Hesselbein. Why should I be entrusted to control anybody else if I cannot even control myself? Now, the next one, and this is one that's very guilt-inducing, especially to the mothers and fathers in the room, is don't say that's great, but. That is great, but. One of the challenges people have is failure to give adequate recognition. And one of the problems with this is when we say that word, but. What impact does that word but have on recognition? Disregard everything that came before this word. Well, you know, I'm going to give you some case studies, and these may produce a little bit of guilt. First one is, a kid comes home from school with a report card. Mommy, Daddy, look at my report card. 5 times I made the highest grade, and 1 time I made almost high grade. If we're not careful, what do we say, Mommy and Daddy? That's great, but why didn't you get the high grade every time? What's the kid thinking? That's great, but why'd I have a jerk like you for a parent? Well, I'm going to give you 2 email case studies I've received on this, a bad one and a worse one, to illustrate my point. First, the bad one. A mother that comes to the class comes back and says, you know, I just lived, but that's great, but case study. Came home, son gets 5 A's and a B. What's parents say? Remember the case study, I'm proud of you. Comment, then the kid says, total silence. Parent replies, I'm very proud of you. Finally, the kid looks and says, when are you going to yell at me? Well, and then the comment is, I'm not going to yell at you. I love you. Kid was so happy. Very hard not to say that's great, but. Now, that's the bad case study. The worst case study is another gentleman thought the story of that parent was funny, and this he's a father, and he goes back and he told that story to his family. He said, my son, after I told the story, looked at me and said, Daddy, you think that story's bad? I made 5 A-pluses and 1 A. You told me that's great, bud. Said, I've never felt so hurt in my whole life. His son was a valedictorian of his high school. What message was he getting from Daddy? Not good enough. Not good enough. So if we say that's great, but enough times to people we love, what do we tell them? There's no great. All there ever is but. Now let me summarize what I've talked about so far. First, I talked about it's hard for successful people to change. Why? The more successful we become, the more positive reinforcement we get. They laugh at our jokes. They act like we're smart. Any human or animal replicates behavior that's followed by positive reinforcement. And the higher up we go, the more of that we get, the harder it gets to change. Two things happen. One, it's hard for us to hear the truth. Why? Well, we all tend to accept feedback from others that's consistent with the way we see ourselves. And the more successful we become, the better we start feeling about ourselves. The more people tell us we're wonderful, harder it is to hear negative feedback. And then number two, the more successful we become, harder it is for people to give us negative feedback. It gets very, very difficult. So that's part of the dynamic. And again, we talked about five different things to look at in terms of some classic mistakes. The first one, winning too much. And again, at the bottom of an organization, it's important to win. Every time you get promoted, though, we need to make winning about them, not about ourselves. And it's hard for winners not to win. Adding too much value, hard for smart people not to add too much value. Then we talked about using small amounts of money to create large changes of behavior. And three bad habits you can use that as one is making those destructive comments. Very important to breathe and say, wait a minute, this is not the way I don't want them talking about me. Be careful not to make those destructive or angry comments about other people. Talked about my friend Francis Hesselmein. Then the other two, you know, that stubborn thing, no but, however, and finally, don't say that's great but. Now, I've had a great time sharing some of the highlights of what I've learned coaching some very, very successful people and their classic problems, all in my book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Do we have any questions?
We do. Thank you so much, Marshall Goldsmith. One of the questions that's come in, you talked at length about the need to avoid destructive comments, but what about the value of constructive remarks and making them so that they are sincere and that they are genuine and not just seeming to be a platitude?
Well, let me give you a couple of strategies on that. The one thing I teach is something called the six-question approach to coaching. And if anybody would like a copy of the article, send me an email, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. Marshall has two L's. I'll send your copy. I'll briefly describe it right now. First is have a dialogue with each of your direct reports about once every 2 to 3 months that cover six basic issues. Issue number one, where are we going? Say, here's the big picture. Here's where I see our team going. And then say, where do you think we should be going? Question two, where are you going? Here's where I see you and your part of the business going. Where do you think you should be going? Question number three, doing well. Here's where I see you and your part of the business doing well. Then ask a question. What do you think you're doing well? Then number four, which addresses your point, suggestions for the future. I'd say in order to help things get better in the future, here's ideas I'd have for you. And then ask the person a good question. If you were the coach for you, what ideas would you have? And be open to realizing their ideas might be better than yours. Number five, as your leader, how can I help? And then finally, number six, here's what I'm trying to get better. What ideas do you have for me? Six basic questions once every 2 to 3 months. And the key to making the process work is in between time, you say to the other person, if you ever feel you're getting a lack of feedback, lack of recognition, overcommitted, no clarity on objectives, any of these issues, please talk to me. I'm going to try to do my job every 2 to 3 months. And if you do your job in between, there is no reason we should have any issues on coaching, on feedback, on clarity, on alignment. I've used this technique with 7 CEOs, 7 out of 7, massive improvement. I've never seen it fail.
Okay. Now, here's a question that's come up a couple of times, and that is the fact that you said successful people have a hard time hearing the truth, that they're surrounded by people who praise them and laugh at their jokes. How does successful people make sure that they are hearing the truth, that they surround themselves with people who will tell them the truth, give them the bad news?
Well, I'm going to give you one technique, and it won't solve all this problem. It might help a little bit. We all say we hate suck-ups. Everybody hates suck-ups. Hates, I want the honest truth. Everybody says that. I do a survey in my classes. I say, how many people in the room own a dog that you love? Well, and they'll all wave their hand. I say, what's your dog's name? Well, Spiffy and Fido. And I say, okay, what family member gets the most positive recognition at home? Would that be your husband or your wife, or would it be your kids or your dog? In almost every case, guess who wins? The dog. And then I say, well, that's interesting. Do you love your dog more than the other members of your family? They'll go, no, I don't. I say, how come the dog gets the most recognition? Well, the dog doesn't judge me and doesn't talk back, and the dog's happy to see me when I come home, and no matter what I do, the dog loves me. The dog hups and licks me. Dog's a suck-up. Well, we all tend to reinforce people that reinforce us. Now, I'm going to give you four guidelines to answer your question to help really not encourage suck-ups and encourage people to tell you the truth. One is, list your direct reports four ways. Number one, how much do they like me? Now, you don't know how much they like you. What's important is how much do you think they like you. We all say we hate suck-ups. We hate obvious suck-ups, blatant suck-ups. We hate bad suck-ups. We tend to favor those good suck-ups that don't look like they're sucking up. Number two, how much are they like me? How much do they remind me of me? For example, many engineers play favorites with people they don't like. It sounds like this. Oh, she's a jerk, but she's an engineer. Well, she's a good person, but she's not an engineer. In other words, or a scientist or a lawyer or somebody reminds me of myself. Number three, what's their contribution to the company and our customers? And then number four, how much positive personal recognition do I give them? If we're honest with ourselves, about 15 to 20% of the cases, we find recognition is really more focused on they like me or they remind me of myself than it is they're doing their job. So a very important thing for leaders to do to encourage honest input is realize we all fall into this trap of encouraging suck-ups. Nobody's better than this. And test yourself on a pretty regular basis the way I just described about what am I giving recognition for? Am I really giving people positive personal recognition for the right reasons, or am I, without meaning to, by the way, this is mostly unconscious, not conscious, am I really giving recognition to the people that I think like me or to the people that remind me of myself? Good question. What's next?
Okay. The next question was asking for clarification on one of the points you made about asking, is it worth it before engaging? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, I'll give you even a more specific question. The wonderful Peter Drucker taught me our mission in life is to make a positive difference, not to prove we're smart, not to prove we're right. We get so lost in proving we're smart and right, we forget that I'm not really making a positive difference here. So then he said, every decision in life is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that. Not the best person or smart person or good person or right person. Every decision is made by that person. Make peace. Then he said, if you need to influence somebody and they have the power to make the decision, then you need to influence them to make a positive difference, one word to describe that person, customer. One word to describe yourself, salesperson. One thing he taught me, sell what you can sell. Make peace with what you cannot sell. Sell what you can sell and make peace with what you cannot sell. And before you deal with any topic, ask yourself, am I willing at this time to make the investment required to make a positive difference on this topic? Am I willing at this time to make the investment required to make a positive difference on this topic? If the answer is yes, go for it. If the answer is no, take a deep breath and let it go. Let it go.
And how do you get around the question, this is something that affects many women particularly, and that is, the fear or the difficulty in saying no?
Well, women tend to be harder on themselves than men. And that relates exactly to what you said. Women are too hard on themselves and are too driven to be the perfect everything to everyone. And I'm going to talk about this in the class I teach. The average woman is seen as getting better 360-degree feedback than the average man. Marion Ruderman, Center for Creative Leadership, my good friend Jim Kouzis, and Barry Posner have huge studies. The average woman is wanting to deal with much more than the average man. That's that desire to be the perfect everything to everyone. Women are too hard on themselves. So the one thing I say to women is, number one, don't be too hard on yourself. Number two, don't feel a need to do everything. One of the great women leaders I heard was the CEO of a large company, and she was giving a talk to one of the women's leadership programs where I was a speaker, and she said, basically, look, don't fall into this trap of you have to do everything. She said, to start with, don't do chores. Now, she said, if you like cooking, cook. You don't like cooking, pay somebody else to cook. Don't do any minimum wage work that you don't want to do. Well, one of the women in the class challenged her. This was in a big bank. And she said, easy for you to say. You know, you're rich. She looked at this woman and said, I know the minimum wage of a woman in this room is $250,000. Don't tell me you can't hire someone to do minimum wage work. You're devaluing your time. Don't give me that as an excuse. Very profound. Total silence in the room as, you know, she shut this woman up. But, you know, her point, I think, is very well taken. Don't do chores. Also, don't feel a need to volunteer to do everything and be a role model for all women who ever lived. One of the classic problems with women CEOs that I work with is they're just harangued by people to give so many talks and be this mentor and that and everything else. They barely have time to do their job. This woman said, look, I'm a CEO. I do my job. I do my job well. I take care of my health, and I spend time with people I love. She said, that's about it. I don't do anything else. Why? I want to do three things great. That's enough.
And what are some of the classic differences between the way that women experience success and the way that men experience success?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the classic differences experiencing success between women and men is self-recognition of success. Men tend to be much more self-promotional than women. And one of the things when I work with women, I say is, look, if you believe in yourself, don't be afraid to promote the product. Don't have this hesitancy toward personal marketing, brand management, and self-promotion. And that doesn't mean you need to be a braggart or a show-off, because that's not really good self-promotion anyway. But it does mean, look, don't be hesitant to promote yourself if you believe in your, if you believe in the product, don't be hesitant to sell it. And a lot of women fall into this trap of my great work should be rewarded without me having to promote myself. Well, if that were true, no company would need a marketing function. God really doesn't care about your great work. So there's no way you can come out of the sky and recognize what you've done just because you did it. You know, Apple Computer, they make good products, but they have a marketing function. Well, they need to do advertising, they need to do marketing. It's just part of life, and I think very important to accept that. Don't be too hard on yourself, and on the other hand, be willing to really stand up for what you believe in, and if you think you've got something good, don't be afraid to share it with the world.
Great. Well, that is all we have time for today. The book is What Got You Here Won't Get You There. It is our author and speaker today is Dr. Marshall Goldsmith. I want to thank him and our listeners. You can hear Marshall Goldsmith speak on April 21st at the Watermark Conference for Women Silicon Valley. To register, go to www.watermarkconferenceforwomen.org. Thank you.